awesome. Oh, there we go. All right, so a couple things before I get into my talk, a couple things. So John Sanders said I have to say something about Go Zags. So, okay, I fulfilled it. All right, so we're excited about them breaking into this new ground, the Final Four. That's awesome. So the next thing I want to share is that, you know, I was gone last week, and so when I go away from here, it's like I become this different person. Like I revert back to me being kind of shy and kind of insecure and kind of, you know, and then when I get involved with the group, of course, you know, I do my thing and everybody loves it. But in this trip, there were so many people that I had been acquainted with in earlier years, and they came up to me and they said, you know, you look so different, you look so happy, you look so healthy, you look so awesome. And as I was reflecting upon those comments, it occurred to me the reason why they've noticed that is because I'm so in love with this ministry. I'm so in love with my congregation. I'm so in love with what we're creating together. And I got to tell you, I've never had this experience before in the 40 years of being in ministry. This is the first time I've ever had the experience of really feeling sort of really well within myself and able to let all this in. And it's so wonderful. And I want everybody to experience what I'm experiencing now. It's important that we feel this connected to a sense of well-being and knowing of our worth, and you mirror that for me. And that's such a gift. And I want to mirror that for you because it's the only way that I can kind of honor what my experience is to value your presence here and your effort to help create something that really makes a difference in this world. Thank you for that gift. Now let's see if I can do this talk. So I'm many times people come up to me afterwards and say, you know, did you write this talk for me? You know, because it was so appropriate. And I want to just tell you, yes. just yes. At the end of the talk, yes. It's for you. Just you. And you know who you are. Okay, you know exactly who you are. So I'm going to be talking about an experience that many of us have that we've sort of coined hell in the hallway. It's kind of what happens when one door closes and we're waiting for the next door to open. Anybody in a situation like that? Anybody? I think a lot of us have been in those kinds of situations. We'll unpack that a little bit as we go, but I want to create a context first because it's important for me that you are clear that as we bring transformational ideas to you, invite you to engage them for the purpose of overcoming our self-imposed limits, it's important to have a kind of context. It's helpful when we know the what and the why, because it makes the how a little bit clearer for us. We understand some of this. And so I want to give you a little bit of that. And the context for me as I'm working to process my own hell in the hallway experiences, I feel like that's what planet Earth is, hell in the hallway, really, in some respects. But anyway, as I work on for myself, I have to always continue to reset the context that begins this spiritual endeavor, the spiritual work. And so the context for me is that Jesus says that abundant life is already given unto us. It's what already is the reality that we can access, the abundant life. Now, the challenge is that we're not experiencing that abundant life, and so the question I have is, what's in the way? What are we placing in the way of our experience of an abundant life? And while we may each have a different definition of what our abundant life might look and feel like, all of us perhaps can agree at some fundamental level that abundant life lands in us with respect to the felt sense that no matter what, all of our needs will be met. Would you agree? That no matter what an abundant life looks like, it lands within us in this abiding sense that all is well, that all things are working together for the greater good, that I don't have to, the role that I have is not to try to make it happen, but to remove the obstacles to my experience of that felt sense that all is well. Can you see how that's important? That we have to begin in the awareness that it's happening already, and if I'm not experiencing it, it's something that is I'm putting in my way of experiencing that abundant life. So how are we in the way of the abundance that has already been given to us? That's what we want to unpack, because if there's something that we're doing that is excluding us from this experience of our wholeness, of our abundance, of our more than enoughness, we've got to address that, because God is not going to fix that for us. Remember, no amount of prayer is going to get God to change the way the mirror works. And if we're uncomfortable with what is being reflected back to us, we have to look at how we're showing up in the presence of the mirror. Because if we're showing up, you know, inadequate, insecure, not good enough, not okay, well then, that's what gets reflected back, you see. And so as we look at what's in the way, we can just boil it down to the sense that I must be collapsing this field of infinite possibilities that is my abundance into the context of whatever my belief, you know, filters out. And so that's what we need to understand, is that when we have a belief that is not the truth of us, but we're living in that belief is that as if that is who we are, when I'm living as if who I am is my inadequacy or unworthiness or not good enough, you know what I'm talking about. If we're living as if that's the truth of us, and that doesn't happen consciously, it's not like we're taking on our inadequacy and just kind of having that as be our guide. We don't do that consciously, but the fact of the matter is, if something is running us unconsciously, and it's creating a life of insufficiency, a life of frustration, a life of things not moving in a direction that is really affirming or supportive, then the question is, what must I believe about what I'm having in my experience in life that is an obstacle to experiencing that sense that I'm okay, I'm taken care of, I'm loved, I'm whole? And so my sense and what we have been describing all along and what we put forth through the Q process is that because of these limiting beliefs that we have taken on because of circumstances where we were ill-equipped to be able to be present to a moment when through whatever was taking place we took on a belief about ourselves that wasn't the truth, the point is that when that becomes the default operating system of our innermost self, if the little boy or little girl in us is still believing that this is their truth, then we can see that there is some work that we must do if we are to have the experience of this greater reality called the abundant life, you see. And so as we see that this is the challenge that we face, then the next thing we need to understand is that there is a work that we must understand in consciousness that is required of us. So on one level, we have to be conscious, awake in our life, aware, present in the moment, but then recognize that our tendency is to fall asleep and to allow our self system to run our life. Our life patterns run our life. You know what I'm talking about? That there's an aspect of our life we wake up to ourself every morning, and we kind of rediscover our discomforts in the morning early so that we can sort of prepare ourselves for the day. It's as if we reboot up the old self in anticipation of all the slings and arrows that we might face in life, and then wonder why our life is not unfolding in some kind of greater good plan. And so I'm wondering if you know how much of what is this dichotomy between what is conscious and what is unconscious in us, or subconscious. What percentage of us runs us unconsciously. Do you know what percentage that is? Can you guess? 95% of our behavior is driven by a self-system that runs beneath our awareness. Now, there's nothing inherently bad about that. It's just that it includes all of those parts of ourself, our identity, that is entangled in beliefs that aren't the truth of us. And we have to disentangle from that. Now, the challenge is that we can have a conscious intention to, let's say, lose some weight. Anybody ever do that? Okay, but what if the bulk of us, 95% of us, is saying, "Oh, you're never gonna stay on that diet. You always quit. You're a loser. You know, you're always gonna be overweight." You know, there's this voice that can undermine our best intentions. Are you familiar with that phenomenon? So we have to create a workaround. In other words, it's going to take us a long time to try to make conscious all that hidden material. But all we have to do is just recognize what's going on in our life and how we're feeling, and we're accessing that hidden material already. It's not like we have to do a depth of kind of digging. It's just all we have to do is be present and ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? And know that it's connected to a belief. And know that if it's uncomfortable, it's connected to a limiting belief. And know that the antidote to a limiting belief is to get in touch with the felt sense of this greater good that is in the context of this abundant life. When I feel that I know at the depth of my being that all my needs are met, and I hold that feeling as the context within which I want to bear witness to my life unfolding, I begin to gather evidence of all the ways in which I'm supported in my life, as opposed to focus upon the limits, the darkness, the inadequacies, the things that are wrong with my experience. And so can we not see that there's a shift in where we place our attention awareness that automatically begins to adjust the dial on the quality of our life? Can you see how that's so far? Okay, so if 95% of what runs us is unconscious, we need to understand the dynamics of that phenomenon, because we have to leverage it. We cannot work against the dynamic of that process. And so Dr. Joe Dispenza says this very powerful statement. He says, "The body doesn't know the difference between an emotion that is created by an outer event or one that is created by thought alone." Now, the reason why this is important is because we are conditioned to believe that I have to have an experience before I can know how I feel about things. And as you think about things, that's sort of the order in which we observe our experience from the outside in. So I have an experience, it creates a kind of elevated emotion, and if it's positive, it's great. If it's uncomfortable, then it seems as if something's against me. So, But the point that we're wanting to emphasize is that we, through thought alone, can also generate a felt sense of an experience linked to the thought as opposed to an external experience. So in other words, we can actually, through training and practice, think a thought, create an emotional state, and express that state in the context of what we're having in the present moment. And therefore, condition the feel to draw into our experience something that is aligned with that intentionality, that frequency, that felt sense of how we're being with what we're having. So if you're tracking this, if you're following this, great. If it's kind of still fuzzy, no worries, because we're going to still work to clear this up. Another point is that emotion or feelings creates an experience in the body. So when you feel angry or you feel sad or feel hurt or feel depressed, there is a chemistry that the body has become modulated to or conditioned to. So when we live, for instance, by the hormones of stress, and studies have shown that 70% of the time that's what's happening, then we create the internal body chemistry that also informs our thinking. So if our chemistry is kind of resonating to the incoherence of what's surrounding us, that influences the kind of thoughts that we have about what's going on. So in some respects, not only do we have to settle our nervous system, we also have to settle our body's experience so that we can unleash its capacity to support our intention to align our thoughts and our feelings and our attention and awareness so that we can bear witness and therefore observe a greater good in our midst that removes the veil of limiting beliefs. And that is possible. That is something that we can actually do. And so that's the substance of what I'm wanting to talk about, because guess what? This is the transformational sweet spot. In other words, when you are in the in-between, where you are in crisis, when you are in some kind of change, some kind of process that has moved you from one sense of knowing yourself into a place where all of a sudden your sense of identity and the sense of who you are becomes kind of disentangled or even destroyed or rocked to its foundation, those are the moments when we have the greatest access to that portal to begin to recondition those parts of our body-mind that are ready to be awakened and brought forth into a greater expression. And so we want to honor and value the experiences that Hell in the Hallway represent, because it is fertile ground for us being able to apply spiritual practices in the context of all that we know now in terms of brain science and quantum science and adult development and spiritual principles. The science and those principles are coming together now to offer us a clarity, a coherent map to working with the whole system that is our body. And we could call this, in many ways, quantum spirituality, but at the depths of it, it's enabling us to amplify the capacity of our spiritual teachings to really transform our lives. And that's where we're going with this. And so there's a lot of difference in Hell in the Hallway kinds of experiences. Probably the easiest one for us to relate to is when a relationship ends. And let's just do a survey. How many of you ever failed a relationship before? How many of you ever failed in like several relationships before? So we are serial relationship killers, right? I mean, just look at all the baggage, the damage that gets done when relationships end. So it seems as if, you know, it's inevitable that whenever a relationship ends, then there's this kind of upset and hurt, and so Hell in the Hallway becomes an experience that is very powerful, especially with respect to understanding what's needed for us to emerge from the hallway in a place that is really able to then function in a way that makes relationships really possible, or at least authentic. And then there are other dynamics, such as dealing with situations that require our capacity to manifest greater abundance, or money, or anything that has to do with our capacity that really goes to taking care of our responsibilities and the frustration, the worry. Sometimes things happen that shove us into a place where we don't know how to deal with stuff. Just a couple days ago, Jane and I, we talked to our tax guy, and he said, "Oh, your year is great. You're getting $2,000 back, and we'll put that towards your estimates, which won't be very much." And we felt so relieved, because, you know, that's just the nature of what's going on for us right now, a little tight. And then we got our tax returns, and without any explanation, we find that it's not that we get a $2,000 refund, but that we have to pay like $1,500 and then $12,000 in estimates for the next year. And they're like, ah, you know that feeling? So anyway, I'm not going to go into that anymore, but that's my Hell in the Hallway moment that I'm kind of working through myself. And so that's symbolic of that. And then there are Hell in the Hallway experiences that happen when we receive a troubling diagnosis, or we have a loved one going through a process where everything's on hold. You ever been in those experiences? I remember when I got my cancer, you know. All of our dreams, all of a sudden, we had to let them all go. Because that's not what hit the hell in the hallway. You don't do dreaming in the hell in the hallway. That's not what happens. You do some letting go, you see. And then there's other things like, you know, people are moving on. In our congregation, we got some folks in the hallway. And all of these experiences are sacred experiences. I cannot underestimate or underemphasize the importance of us having a value and a respect and a compassion and empathy for what is happening in our human family now. Our country is in the hallway. We can look at all the metaphors that this works for. And I've discovered in my experience of being in the hallway, you know, I've learned finally now that my immediate reaction is not to try to get out of the hallway. Where before, you know, as soon as that door closed, I was pounding on there, let me back in! Especially if it was a relationship. Please take me back! You know, I've done that. I've been a sick puppy. But let's talk about do's and don'ts of the hell and hallway experience. And oh, by the way, we're not going to finish this conversation. I get to speak next Sunday, so we're not going to try to finish this up. Race you to a quick little how-to, as a little spiritual practice. No, we're going to unpack this all the way. So the do's and don'ts. So the first thing that's important, the first do that we need to understand is we need to have self-compassion. We just need to stop, take a breath, and be with ourselves, and honor the sacredness of being in an experience that places us in a very pivotal relationship with either transforming ourselves so that when we exit the hallway, we're not exiting to a different experience. We're exiting as a different self. As a different person. Because unless you leave the hallway as a transformed person, you're exiting the door only to find the next door is another hallway. You see. And we sort of want to avoid that one, right? And just a couple of do's and don'ts, because we like to say, I'm not going to try to fill this thing with everything. I want you to think about this and observe it in your own life. And begin to take inventory of your experience. How is my experience right now, given what I'm feeling? All you have to do is get in touch with your feelings and get in touch with what must I believe about what I'm having or myself in order for these feelings to give rise. And really identify and really find a level of comfort in the discomfort of being in the in-between. That's the first step. Don't rush to get out. But once you are all the way present, then you are present to a teacher. Because there's always a teacher in the hallway. It's just that we don't know that. It's just that we can't see it because of emotionally everything's so fuzzy and vague within us, we can't access the presence that is there to accompany us in the hallway. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. But it's important for us to understand that there are principles that we can bring to our hell in the hallway experience that don't make this such a overwhelming, uncomfortable moment, because when we know that there's stuff for us to do and we're doing it, then things will take care of themselves. But because we don't know what to do in the hallway and because our condition is such to move away from our discomfort to find its antecedent outside is sort of how we chase after getting out of the hallway is let me have an experience that doesn't make me feel this way anymore. But what if our process of getting out of the hallway is really to deal with what I began this talk with, and that is looking at all the limiting beliefs that are in our way of experiencing this abundant life. Maybe that's what the hallway is, that's its purpose, is to help us sort that out. And so as we talk about what that process is of sorting that out, then we have things that we can do in that hallway experience that actually moves us in alignment with spiritual principles, leveraging our understanding of brain science, and integrating our awareness of the dynamics of fields that are supporting this this unfolding right now. And so as we look towards what's happening in our world, what I'd invite you to do is I'd invite you to be in the question, what does it feel like, can you teach your body emotionally what it feels like to know that all of your needs will be met? Can you teach your body emotionally what that would feel like? And if our abundance is in the context of a greater sense of well-being, can you teach your body emotionally what it feels like to know your worth? What does that feel like to absolutely know your worth, your presence matters? And the reason why we have difficulty kind of going there, the reason why we wonder about that is because that's an unfamiliar experience to our body. Our body doesn't know necessarily what it feels like to always know that its needs will be met. And so part of our effort is going to have to be to develop tools that teach our body what it feels like to engage this abundant experience that already exists that we can't see because we lack the felt sense that is necessary to organize our attention and awareness so that the veil is removed. Now, people have said that we are here in the sense of trying to manifest a greater good so we can finally feel okay and feel joy. But I'm here to tell you that we have to feel okay and feel the joy first before the greater good can come. We'll check into you next week. God bless you. Thank you.